So there's a couple of reasons to discuss right speech. I'd like to put it in the context of, for those of you who have any Christian practices or Christian upbringing, you know it's the Lenten season. Ash Wednesday started Wednesday, Ash Wednesday. And this is the time in when Jesus was in the desert 40 days, 40 nights practicing. And so it's also a nice time to just, it's like our winter, I think of it honestly like our winter retreat, our rains retreat, our 3-month period. And when I say our, I mean in Buddhism, where we practice with an intention for 90 days, you know, find a thing that we've been trying to take care of or take something up or leave something behind. And so I you know, Lenten period is kind of like that. Myself brought up as a Catholic, at least this is how I understood it. And so I like to think that Lent gives me this like other time to try out something that I might have not been able to get at during the winter retreat. And so I invite us to practice with the Lenten period in this way. And I invite us to do that with right speech, because it's a hard one. Yeah, it's a hard one. It's a hard one for all of us. I don't care how long we've been practicing. New practitioner, Dharma teacher, practitioner, 1 year, 20 years, 40 years. It's a practice, right? It is a practice. And so, and it's therefore something that we can continuously cultivate. And so mindfulness of speech, we could call it right speech, or we could call it mindfulness of speech. I like mindfulness of speech because it says, I'm noticing what I'm saying. And maybe it doesn't make me so feel so tight because, oh, I have to do right speech. And if we know, start to notice, we can maybe begin to decide if we want to say what's coming out of our mouth. It may have come out already. And if we're mindful, we'll be aware of that. And we can make a decision, a choice. We have choice. Mindfulness is really about choice, right? It's mindfulness of something. It's always mindfulness of something. I remember Tai used to always say this, it has to be mindful of something, yeah? So it's mindful of speech, right? Mindfulness of speech, mindfulness of walking, mindfulness of eating, mindfulness of brushing our teeth. It's am I becoming aware of what I'm doing in this life? What I'm thinking, what I'm speaking, how I'm acting? And then I have choice. And what do I do with that choice? It's a big responsibility. And I think it's why mindfulness is actually a challenging thing. It's really much easier to just like zone out and just keep habit energies. And it's not even our own, it's things we saw our parents and our folks in our environment do, and we picked it up. It's not even ours. It's, we didn't even make that choice often. I watch some of my mannerisms when I'm around my mother and I laugh, how she holds her head. And I'm like, wow, I do the same thing. Where'd that come from? So these little things, these habit energies that we form, we didn't even decide. And so this practice is what helps us to decide, do I continue that or not? So, and speech is the same way. So there is a lot of teachings in the scriptures, in the Buddhist scriptures, about right speech. Okay, there's tons. I'm going to share one that I like. It's from the Majjhima Nikaya, which is one of the texts, number 21, if anyone wants to look it up. And basically, it says, this is how people speak to each other. Now, let me try to find that. know how I am with this computer. Aha, all right. So there we are. So let me share a screen. And I put a new slide. Oh, no, not that. Okay. So let me make this bigger. All right. So let me read this. So this is Majjhima Nikaya 21. It's a simile of the saw, the Kakapupama Sutta. And this is clearly just a small part of this. It's a really nice, long, maybe medium length sutra that has actually many lessons in it, many lessons. And one of them is, how should we speak with each other? And so the teaching is that others may address you in a timely way or an untimely way. They may address you with what is true or what is false. They may address you in an affectionate way or a harsh way. They may address you in a beneficial way or an unbeneficial way. They may address you with a mind of goodwill or with inner hate. And so the teaching is telling us that there's different way we speak, because this isn't just how others address us. This is also how we address others. And so the speech comes in here in all of these, right? The speech can reflect all this. When should we speak? Is this the time to speak? Is it true or false in our speech? Is it in a kind way or a harsh way? Is it violent speech that may cause harm? Will it cause benefit or will it not be beneficial? And is it coming from a place of kindness and goodwill, or with some difficulty and some hatred or some anger? And so it really shares with us what we might want to be mindful of when we're speaking at any one time. And this includes not only speaking to others, this includes speaking to ourselves. We really need to look at how we speak to ourselves, because as you know, the way we speak out is often the way that we're speaking inside to ourselves. And so when I hear someone speaking in a certain way that might not be truthful, may not be true, or maybe harsh, I always think, I wonder if this person is also just repeating their habit energy, right? The habit energy we spoke of. And so it's just coming out of them, you know, it's just coming out what is inside. This is why this practice of coming home and noticing what is there is so critical. Because it really comes out eventually in some form. Now, this second part here is how the scriptures tell us we respond when someone speaks in an unkind way or a non-beneficial way or a false way or a harsh way or with hatred. And so the Buddha is comparing our response to the earth, where the earth is deep and enormous. And so there's not much that can change it. And so someone who speaks to us, if we're like the earth, one who speaks to us in a harsh way, They would become tired. They would become disappointed because we're so solid like the earth. It doesn't penetrate into us. It doesn't change us. Similarly, scriptures use space as another way of how we might want to be formless and featureless, the teaching says. And the Buddha compares this to someone who's trying to throw dirt and paint into space. And because space is formless and featureless, nothing sticks, right? And it's the same way with this speech that might be harsh or unbeneficial when it's directed toward us. Because we are so much like space, we don't hold on to this I. This person just insulted me. This person just told me a lie. We're not form. We're not tied to this I. Then it doesn't stick. And the featurelessness is similar like that. If we can see ourselves as aggregates of body and mind and consciousness and perceptions and intentions, then we don't get caught up in what is said to us, whether it's good things or whether it's bad things, right? So I had a recent example. I was listening to a talk, a Buddhist talk, a Dharma talk, and the people in the audience were really praising the teacher, which is wonderful. And then the teacher said, none of that sticks to me because I'm just a bag of aggregates. And it was great. You know, he was really presenting back this very deep understanding that, yes, thank you for your praise. And also, I'm not going to let it build up the conceit of I am. Because I'm just this aggregate. I'm formless as this body. Beautiful teaching. And it wasn't even part of the talk. It was at the end when everyone was thanking him. And it doesn't mean we don't offer beneficial and kindness. Of course, it's beautiful. But he was showing that we also don't get caught up in the good speech either, as we don't get caught up in the speech that's ill will and that's harsh. And it's the middle way, right? It's the teaching of middle way. Okay, so it's all great and wonderful to say this is what is our practice and this is what we should do. What's also really important is why do we keep doing the same things? And how do we try to practice with this, right? It's wonderful to just say, do this, do that. Here's 10 points, do that. And we have a lot of this in Buddhism, right? Five mindfulness training, the Four Noble Truths, the Noble Eightfold Path, the Seven Factors of Awakening, the Five Aggregates, the Four Divine. It's like that. Pick a number and we have something that we can take and say, this is how we would do it. And that's part of the beauty for me of this the spiritual practice and this philosophy is it's great that there's these ways to look into and to see how do I try to step toward that or move toward that, knowing that I'm not going to be able to do that. But what I find even more challenging is how do I keep noticing? And that's what mindfulness is. How do I keep noticing when this is happening? And how can I keep catching myself, this awareness, right? And so this habit energy, I think it's really beautifully shared in one way by the way Tai has shared it. And I'd like to share this image that we often use. And so this is now talking about our consciousness and what is it that results in us saying and doing and the habit energy that's there. And so The circle, and many of you probably have seen this. I'm bringing it up because I want to talk about right speech in the context of this. And so this circle represents consciousness. The line through it that breaks it up, the top part represents mind consciousness. This is a consciousness that's aware of everything that's happening, that's right now, the car, the sound, like this, bringing that into being. And then there's store consciousness, as we talk about it in Mahayana and in the Mahayana tradition and in the Plum Village tradition. This consciousness that stores things, preserves things, holds things, and that in this stored consciousness, which we're not aware of, as the mind consciousness is aware of, we have these seeds, bija, the seeds, and that these seeds are these formations that they keep wanting to come up to the surface into the mind consciousness. And so there's so many seeds. I only drew a few. And I also drew different sizes because some of them are tiny and some of them are large. And a lot of this just depends on what has been happening for us in this life and in our previous lifetimes, our karma, right? What karma has resulted in what we're carrying in our store consciousness. So the way we think about this store consciousness is that there's a lot of seeds in our store consciousness that are kind of down there somewhere, maybe near the top, coming up into mind, into awareness, and many that are kind of down here, maybe in the middle, that we've just had for many, many years and lifetimes. And thus, depending on how aware we are and what's coming up and around us, any one of these can come up to the surface. And I want to talk about right speech and wrongs, or yeah, non-right speech in this context, which is, if we have a lot of anger in us, right, and something happens out in our environment and it sparks us, it may not even have to do with that thing, but there's just anger, this formation, this mental formation of anger is so close to the surface because it's so big, right, that it may not be to that particular impingement, but it rises up and it comes to the surface. And then the speech that comes out of us is going to be tinged or comes out of this place of anger. The seed of anger has come to the surface and now it's manifesting in mind consciousness. And we act accordingly. In this case, we're speaking with anger. Or maybe it's hatred, or maybe it's competition. But there's the seeds in here are also the ones we want to cultivate. You know, there's compassion, there's love, there's equanimity, there's care, there's patience, there's all these seeds as well are here. And so this mindfulness, this practice of mindfulness, is to help us become aware of what keeps coming up in any moment. And then when we start noticing, we start practicing in a way and putting ourselves in contexts and environments that starts to shift and maybe make, if this is anger, starts to make it smaller. If this is compassion, starts to make it bigger, right? If this is equanimity, or maybe equanimity is a tinier one, it starts to make it larger. And so this mindfulness allows us to notice what is there in my store consciousness, what keeps coming up whenever something's happening. And maybe I need to notice and take care of that. If something that we don't want come up keeps coming up, that should alert us. Ah, I notice my speech is often violent in many situations, even in a situation where there's nothing that materially is eliciting a violent word, but there's something still there, there's pain in me, there's difficulty in me that I haven't tended to, I haven't had the time to heal. And so it just comes up so quickly. And so maybe I want to find out what that thing is that has made my seed of anger or my seed of violent speech so large. And it might not be speech, right? It might be thought, right? That leads to that speech or that self-talk of anger and violence toward ourselves. And for people who we know who get into altercations, right? Violence, it may come out in action, in that kind of action, right? Any of us who have lived in households that are violent. My father was very, very violent. He had that big seed of anger was like right under that line. And anything, it came up, right? And so how, with this practice, how do we start to notice what is there? What keeps coming up? And what do we want to cultivate? This practice gives us choice. It really gives us choice. And sometimes we're still in environments that don't allow us to shift, right? So we have to acknowledge that. Not everyone is in an environment where they can, if a child is in an environment where there's a lot of anger and they can't get out. I know I felt like that. I tried to run away once. We can't get out sometimes, right? And so we are there. And so, but some of us are in environments where we have choice, real choice, real choice. And what do we do with that choice? What is our responsibility to ourselves and to our spaces around us? What are we going to do when we notice? It really is about that, you know? So the meditation today was to notice what's there. Notice it didn't say to do anything with it, just to be present for it, just to be there for it. Because just that presence brings another energy, right? And that's what happens when we begin to notice. So even when we're angry, even when that seed of anger is bubbling up, the energy of awareness of anger is a different energy. And so that energy now is there. Before it wasn't there. It was just anger by itself hanging out, just, you know, ruling the world. But now comes up another seed, the awareness. And now there's another one there. And so we may think that awareness of anger is nothing. Like, what's that going to do? Now I'm aware of my anger. Big deal. No, it's another energy. And if you understand that energy is neither created or destroyed, then that's an energy that's now there. And that energy begins to transform that. There's that mere awareness, acknowledging presence. And so now something else is there. Now I'm aware. And another deep breath. Now I'm more aware. And another deep breath. Okay, what am I going to do? Okay, what I'm saying, I am angry. No one's saying that don't get angry, but we have a responsibility to be aware that we're angry. And then we have a responsibility to be aware of why we're angry. And then we have a responsibility to respond in the most appropriate way, right? And sometimes the things that cause us to be angry, they need to be dealt with. Clearly, they need to be dealt with. Because there's a lot of things going on in this world that's making us angry these days. But we can't just, like the what do you call it? The bull in the place with all the glass. You can't just and break everything in the process. It doesn't serve anyone. And so that's what mindfulness does. And that's why we talk about this breath, because we breathe in, we breathe out, and now that's a different energy. All of a sudden, there's an energy of breath in and out that slowed us down. And you all know you're here. You all know what this means. You know you've been in spaces where you stop and something makes you take a breath. It's a sigh or it's something. And you know immediately something has happened. That is the energy of awareness. And that energy of awareness, it now notices what is there. And so what are we going to do? Now we got choice. Want to take another breath? Maybe another one? And then when we start seeing it more clearly, then we know how to act. And if we are practicing with mindfulness, which is also rooted in ethical behavior, right? Because mindfulness is keeping something in mind. What we're keeping in mind is this ethical behavior of how we want to be in the world. How do I want to be in this world? Do I want to keep those seeds of anger and greed and competition and, you know, things we may have learned legally? When I say legally, I mean passed down from people who reared us. I mean, you know, you can't help yourself as children. We don't choose our blood relatives. Karma, we're born into families. There's something to live out there and transform, right? So what do we do? Do we have choice to transform that? And then the beautiful thing about this store consciousness is it's not just a store. It's a place where transformation can occur. And so every time that big one comes up to the surface and we take care of it, it goes back down a little smaller. So the next time it comes up, it's not as big. It's not maybe as much to the surface because we're taking good care of it. Now, I know I'm going to add another piece in here because I think this is very important too. So that sutra, the reason I really like that sutra is it has like a lot of things in it. Another part of the sutra is that it actually starts with a woman that everyone is talking about, saying she's kind, she's wonderful, doesn't get angry, nothing. And everybody praises her like that. Oh, so-and-so, let's say Miss Smith, is kind, is praiseworthy, is like that in the community. And so the person who works for her, who does the housekeeping and things like that, she hears this, and so she says, I wonder if this is really true. I'm going to see if she really never gets angry, or is she just not, does she not show anger because I don't do anything to elicit anger? Because I get up early, I do all the work, so there's nothing eliciting. And so what does this smart young lady do? She gets up late. And she gets up late and she says, now let me see what my mistress does. And so the mistress starts to get angry. Why are you late? Why did you get up late? And so the young lady says, oh, she does have anger. And she said, I'm going to see how much anger she has, real anger. And so she gets up later and the mistress gets more angry, calls her lazy something something. And so the young lady says, there's lots of anger here. I'm going to push it more. Well, she didn't say that. Those are my words. Basically, that's what I read. I'm going to push you more, lady. And so she gets up later. And then you know what the mistress does? She breaks her skull, would throw something at her. She's so angry. And so she's bleeding, the young lady, and she runs out to show the whole village. Look what my kind, non-angry mistress just did to me because she was so angry, right? So this is a really deep teaching, really deep teaching, all right? It gets back to the store consciousness of what is there. What is there in our consciousness that we are not aware of, that because of some of our environments, they haven't been brought up, they haven't been elicited, they haven't come up to the surface. And we can go through life in environments that maybe never elicit that. And some of us go through life in environments that are always eliciting that. And we might perceive each other with certain wrong views. Now, I would say that people who grow up in poverty are always being challenged so that any seeds that are there of violence or any kind of ways that make it challenging to just live a decent life is difficult. And that allows the seeds to come up more often. I'm not saying that everyone who is poor is violent. I'm saying that people who are in difficult situations, and I'm using poverty as an example of that, is a situation that will elicit the more difficult seeds to come up more often. And there's teachings about that too. Remember, the eight realizations of great beings. Remember, I told you there's always one. But the eight realizations of great beings, I think it's the fifth or the sixth realization of great beings, is that people who are in poverty have more difficulty. And that difficulty, you know, we can think about what does difficulty, and it's a little bit more stronger than difficulty, but what does difficulty mean? Well, difficulty means that in that store consciousness, there's a lot of those seeds that are going to come up because the environment that's impinging is watering them and they're growing bigger. They're not in the luxury town, and I'm going to be extreme, but the luxury town home where there's three meals a day, one doesn't even think about it because someone puts it on the table. You don't think about clothing, these kinds of different, I'm being very extreme in the environments to make a point that what gets watered grows. But just like how you tend to the garden to shift what's there, weed what you don't want out, cultivate the bush. You don't want it to grow like that. You want it to grow in this way. Okay. In the same way, we cultivate our soul consciousness and what is there. And there's this practice. This like amazing practice that can help us do that. And it helps us have perspective so that when we see someone acting in a certain way, saying certain things, bringing forward something that we think is completely reprehensible, and maybe we pause and think about this a little more mindfully. I wonder what their life situations have been. Before we brand people, right? Like that, because that's what we do, right? Black people are this, brown people are this, white people are this, poor people are this, just like I use that, right? Acknowledging that not everyone who's poor is this. I remember my mom telling me, we can be poor, but we don't have to be dirty, right? Disrupting that thing. Poor people are dirty, right? But we have perceptions and we don't think about what's caused these things to grow. And this reflection, this continuous reflection of ourselves and how we, what are we watering in our store consciousness? And this practice of mindfulness helps us to do that. And so I come back to right speech. Because our speech is so important. It's not just a reflection externally of how we speak with others. It is a reflection of how we speak to ourselves. And when stuff comes out of our mouth, it's because we are doing those things to ourselves. Whatever is driving it, whatever is driving it. And so I invite us to think about, practice with speech for the next 38 days or so. And really notice, just let that be your mindfulness practice for the next month or so. How am I speaking to myself? And how, and if after you say something, just notice how it, maybe there was even a little sentence to yourself before you, it came out your mouth. And we can also take that same compassionate action and notice how people are speaking to us. And think about what's coming up for them in their store consciousness. People who respond a certain way often, you know, we've got many spheres of influence and we have people in them that show up a certain way all the time or most of the time, right? And that can be in a more positive or in a more difficult light. So maybe we start thinking about holding them with that compassionate gaze. I wonder why that's in their store so big. What situations have been watered that it's like that, presents in this way? Just that compassionate gaze can help, maybe, because that's an energy that you're bringing forth. It's different than the one of like, oh my, you know, that kind of severe response that we come sometimes. So that shift in energy is already a shift that's out there. And that's a helpful energy. That's an energy that moves toward significant awareness and change. So I went a bit longer than I wanted to, I apologize. I'm going to stop the recording. Yeah, it's been recording, stop.